So good morning, everyone. We've added, this is the end user track. We've added this new this year. And a couple announcements before we get started. Reminder that the first break's at 10:30, lunch is going to be at 12:30 in the exhibit area. And I guess they're reminding everyone that seating's available everywhere around the facility. All of you should know that Wi-Fi information's on page 5 of the program. And validation of your parking tickets can be done at the registration desk. All the presentation slides and audio are being posted to the conference website. And again, all that login information should be on page 5 of the program. This afternoon, the conference will end with a summary panel discussion on CMBP policy changes. Additional feedback, you're going to be getting an email message today at about 3 o'clock to give you a link to a survey. Feedback is very much encouraged on that. And again, this being a new track that we're starting this year for end users, good feedback on that. I think one thing would be nice is to have a lot more true end users, so maybe we can get more next year. The next conference will be much earlier. A reminder, that's going to be May 18 through 20 in Ottawa. And call for presentations are already open. So be sure to submit that before December 15th. And again, any other questions, stop by the registration desk. So again, as part of our new end user track, let's start out with the presentation here by Ryan Thomas, Commonly Accepted Keys and CSP Initiatives. Give a little bit background on Ryan. With over 10 years of experience in IT security industry, Ryan has led and contributed to many successful IT security consulting projects and initiatives across a wide variety, both private and public. Responsible for the FIPS 140 cryptographic module validation program at CGI, and he leverages his solid technical background, strong interpersonal skills, and adaptability to manage complex projects in an efficient and effective manner. Ryan's primary focus and objective is to bring superior value to his clients. So let's get started with the end user track with Ryan. Please welcome Ryan.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate you taking the time to spend this morning with me. As it was just said, what I'm going to do today is just talk a little bit about something I've been working on recently, and I've just kind of deemed it the Commonly Accepted Keys and CSPs Initiative, but don't hold the name against it. I just had to pick a name. Just a little bit, I think there was a great introduction there, but there's my contact points. Our lab is based in Ottawa, Canada, for anyone that may not be aware. Just a couple of little bit of, about CGI Global Labs. So we've been a Common Criteria Evaluation Facility since 1999. We got our NB Lab CST laboratory accreditation in May 2011, and since that time we've done just under, I was hoping to say 100, but just under 100 FIPS validations, but we couldn't get them done in time. So just under 100 since May 2011. So what we're here to talk about today, what's this all about? Just a little bit of background here, some basis in the standard. Our vendor security policy, so I work at a lab, and if there are vendors in the audience, your security policy would have to list the keys and cryptographic security parameters that's employed by your cryptographic module. There's just some references to the standard and to the Appendix C and the IG. But at a very, very high level, we need sufficient detail on the type of algorithm used by that key CSP, a mapping of that key CSP to an approved service. And for each of those services, we want to see the type of operator access that, so it might have read, write, or so on to that key or CSP. So that's just kind of a background of what this is all about. So problem definition. So we've got, generally speaking, three different types of groups here. We've got our vendors, we've got our labs, and of course we've got the CMVP or CMVP reviewers. So from each perspective, when you talk to the vendors, they know their products, they have a good understanding of security, but when they're trying to get the FIPS validation certificate, sometimes the struggle is trying to list those keys and CSPs in the way that the CMVP want to see them. So from my perspective, from the lab perspective, most of the time we understand the requirements, we hope. We review all kinds of different vendors' products, and you know, we feel that by the time they go into the queue, they meet those requirements. But we just wish that there was a good starting point somewhere where there was an approved template that we could at least give to our vendors so that we could save some time and some effort. And again, I can't put myself in the CMVP's shoes, but if I could, I would say they see a lot of different security policies from all the different labs. Even the most common and frequently, or modules that are validated very frequently, I should say, are not consistently documented. And of course, this results in more time during the review and more time, more comments to the lab, and it just kind of extends that whole process. So my idea, and maybe not just my idea, I think other people have toyed with it in the past, but hopefully there's a way we can make this a little bit simpler. So where we're at right now is what I've done is put together a keys and CSP's table template that addresses those requirements. I've sat down at least once with the CMVP to kind of review and integrate some of their guidance into that template. So then what I did is sat down and put some of these algorithms and functions into that template. And then I'm going to lather, rinse, repeat, kind of go back to them, try to get some more feedback, continue to improve it, continue to integrate their feedback. And then the last step, which I'll get into at the end, is to try to just share them. This is not just for me. This is just to, just to put it out there so that, everybody can hopefully benefit, hopefully contribute. And again, give more feedback. Maybe we can get an entire comprehensive listing or database of all of these that we can all benefit from. So I think I may have already let some of the benefits out of the bag, but just again from the different actors or perspectives. So from the vendors, what you're going to get is you're going to have these pre-populated lists of keys and CSPs that you can use, and you can customize them. So you can take them, modify them to your implementation, and hopefully it results in, it'll save some time and effort. From my perspective, from the lab's perspective, when we initially are working with you, we have these clear, consistent checklists that we feel have already been vetted by the CMVP that you can use to start with. And again, I hope that it would result in a better understanding of what the CMVP are looking for from us, the labs, and you, the vendors, in this table. The CMVP folks, the reviewers, would hope that the benefit would be conformant or more conformant table inputs with sufficient, consistent details. And it would result in less time to review, less comments. Everybody benefits, right? Winning. We're all winning from that. So I think I've said that a couple times at the bottom point here. But we really just want to increase efficiency by improving the consistency. Okay. Just some of the inputs used. I won't spend too much time on that. But the NIST special publications, the IETF RFCs, those FIPS pubs. The implementation guidance, looked a lot at recently validated security policies that are listed on the CMVP website. One of the most important things is the CMVP feedback, because of course that's our objective here, is to meet the requirements in the way that they want to see these tables. And then there was a security policy template that was kind of released and is kind of out there on the ether from back in 2011. So I did try to integrate some of the things that I saw in that original template. Okay, so this is where I have to kind of caveat a little bit. So obviously the type of module and the boundary is going to determine quite a bit when we're discussing these keys and CSPs. Of course, if it's a software module and a hardware module, and I'm not going to go into all of these different scenarios today, I'm just going to try to put these tables together in a way that can address the most popular types of modules, and then you, the vendor, and the lab can work together to kind of customize it, tweak it, tune it to your implementation. But generally speaking, if it's a hardware module, obviously many of the keys are reside inside of the boundary, and those could be persistent keys, which they survive a reboot, for lack of a better term. Those could be ephemeral keys, which could be part of those network protocols, so they could be temporary or session keys. I'm going to touch on this a little bit later on, if I don't run out of time. But and then when we have a software module, the typical software modules that we tend to see, they don't store keys. It could just be a cryptographic library, and it could just be passed that, it could be passed the key as an attribute by a calling application or process, or it could just operate with a reference to the key CSP in the in memory. So again, there will be some variance there, and I can't account for all of it. We will try to make the tables a little bit better once we have some additional effort and additional feedback first to make sure that at least that they're what the CMVP wants to see. Okay, So we're going to get into the template here that we did create and get into some of the objectives for the template. That's just a very high-level example of an AES key, but I'm going to go into and dive into each of the columns here going from left to right. So column one, key CSP name, right? So I think that's fairly obvious. And we just want to identify the key or CSP used by the module. One of the recommendations is to avoid confusion. We want to map it to a NIST special publication, a FIPS publication, you know, best practice, something like an IETF RFC, so that it's recognizable. We don't want to see, maybe we have seen submissions, but I won't name names, but we've had TLS key 1, TLS key 2, where in reality the TLS protocol would, you know, commonly we see them as a session key or an authentication key, right? And it just helps better facilitate understanding to kind of have a consistent and a clear CSP name that kind of maps back to that best practice or that standard. Now going to the second column, moving to the right, is the type of CSP. And of course, again, it's just some additional information. All we want to do here is identify the type, so the algorithm that would be used by the key or the CSP, including the reference to the FIPS or NIST SP, and of course the size. So I have an example down here where we would have AES, we would list our key sizes and the modes that we supported, okay? And of course we would want to either reference the NIST special publication or the FIPS pub that AES function is referenced in. Generation and input. So keys can be generated, derived, and or input into the module. So we want to explain how that's done. So the technique would be listed there, responsible for the generation or the derivation. One example is the 98 DRBG, or you could have a password-based key derivation function. That's just one example. If the CSP is entered, we'd want to specify if it's done electronically or manually, and if it's entered encrypted or in plain text form. If it's ephemeral, there are some conditions where it could be generated multiple times. So what we want to explain there to the CMBP is that the key could be generated each time a call is made into that module. So again, we want to be able to provide them with that detail. Output, fairly obvious. We want to just say how it can be output and if it's output in encrypted or plain text form. So storage. We want to basically specify during the operation of the cryptographic module the location and type of storage. We want to explicitly list that in the table. So as an example, if it's a persistent key, it may be in flash or it could be in the hard drive. It could be a different location. If it's ephemeral, obviously it could be in memory, just for during that session or while that particular operation is executing. And we also want to mention if it's encrypted or in plain text form. And also, in some instances, we have a module where the module is only operating with a pointer or reference to the CSP, and not the actual CSP. So again, we'd want to specify that. Okay. Column number five is use, and the objective there is we want to understand explain how the key is used during the cryptographic module operation. And what we want, another important thing that I may or may not be done consistently by vendors today, is we want to see a direct mapping to the to an approved service that the cryptographic module performs. And there's different ways that we can do that. I know there's probably going to be some groans about that. But one of the things that I think was discussed on the phone with the CMBP is you could use an indicator or a unique identifier in this particular column, and it could have an indicator like service 1 or 1 in square brackets, and then that could map to one of the approved services in the service table. And again, so it does say in the standard that they do want that there should be or shall be a mapping to all of the approved services and the keys in CSP. So that's just one idea there, I think, but vendors could be free to, you know, meet the spirit of that in different ways. So again, we just want, the main point there is the mapping. And the other one there is the type of access for each key in CSP in the table. So those, some examples there are read, write, and execute. And I do think that vendors are doing a pretty good job of that right now. You do see that in many of the non-proprietary security policies that are posted. So the point of emphasis here is the mapping to the service, to the approved services. That might be a little new for some folks. Column six, zeroization. So The purpose of this is just to provide details on how the CSP shall be zeroized, and all the different techniques for the CSP shall be listed in this table, okay? So what the zeroization could be we could have a zeroization command, that's used to overwrite the CSP, and that's like an explicit command that would target and overwrite that one particular key or CSP. For our ephemeral keys, you could power cycle, and those keys would be gone. They could also, some ephemeral keys could also be zeroized upon the completion of that operation or when the session is over. Or you could have a procedural zeroization, which the CO provide, does multiple steps, and it results in the CSP being overwritten and zeroized. Okay. So some example listings. Be gentle; they're still in draft. I am getting some folks to review these, and I have a full-time job as well, so I haven't been able to work on this as much as I had hoped. A warning just before we go into these is this is the initial objective of this is really just to provide a good starting point for everybody. These will become more mature and better as time progresses and we get more folks with better input and, just some more feedback from the CMVP. Again, I recognize that depending on the type of module, these are going to differ. And you can take these inputs and you'll have to customize them, obviously, to your modules. Okay, so I started with the DRBG because, frankly, it was low-hanging fruit and I could get it done quickly, get it to the CMVP to review. There are still some inconsistencies, though, in the security policies that we saw that were some recently validated modules. So we felt it was, there was some value there. So as you can see, I won't go into too much detail, but as you can see, when we have our DRBG, this is a hash-based one, by the way. So we have our DRBG seed, our internal state, those values being C and V. When you go across the table, you can see I mentioned these earlier. We have our type, our generation, input, output, storage, zeroization, and then use. And then you can see the mapping to the services. In some cases, there may be no service to map to. So in that case, we just put not applicable. So that's just an example. I didn't want to dive too much into detail there. The worst offenders that I mentioned earlier are probably the network protocols. So I've done the SSH, SNMP, SRTP. Those were pretty low-hanging fruit. TLS and IKE could be a little more complex depending on the implementation. You can have pre-shared keys. There can be many different types of things going on in terms of the security association for IKE. So those ones might take a little more time, and I might want to, say, have someone like Alan Roginski review those with me before posting them. So just, again, to show a couple more examples here, not to spend too much more time on them, but so we have secure shell. So we have our public and private key pair, our session key, and then the Diffie-Hellman key pairs that are used in the key agreement process. So we would, again, go across them. The one thing that I didn't put in there this time is the service reference or mapping, and I apologize for that, but that would be in the use column. But the focus was more just trying to populate these. So this is what they would kind of look like. Again, I would still want the CMVP to review these before I publicly make them available, but it's a good starting point, like I said. SNMP, so SNMP v3 specifically. So what we're doing here, again, is just listing, if it's applicable, the engine ID, the password, the session key, and the authentication key. Again, there's a couple of blanks there. So, I'm wasn't quite done with these, but I just wanted to put them up there for the purpose of examples. And then you can see where you get to TLS. A lot more going on. You have to account for different scenarios. So some implementations may not have the pre-master secret key as an example, or pre-share key. So as you can see, it does get a little bit more complex as we move on. I'm going to hopefully get the CMVP to review those before I make them publicly available. Okay, so I didn't want to post the IKE and the IPsec because it wouldn't fit on a slide. It was too big. I'm still working on it, and I'd like someone like Alan Roginski again to review it before I post them. But I will say where I'm going to post them in a couple of moments. So, getting through this pretty quickly. What's next? So what I'm going to do, I think I've mentioned a couple of times, is get an additional review and feedback from the CMBP. That should occur, hopefully, according to their availability. But I will be sending them to them very soon. I want to share these, so we're going to put them out there for everyone to see. And I did talk to the folks at the CMUF yesterday, and so they will be posted on the CMUF website when they are completed. So if you don't have access to that website, I did get Matt's permission here to post this. So you can reach out to Matt Keller, and he can provide you an email, which will provide you in turn with access to the CMUF site. What the plan is to just kind of create a thread, and then I'm going to start posting these up there. I can start with the template, obviously, because that has been reviewed once. But and as we get some feedback from the CMBP, I'll begin to post the rest of these templates. And hopefully it'll encourage some other folks to contribute. I know there's some consultants out there that do a fairly good job with documentation. It might be in their best interest, again, to maybe take up the reins, and we can start having some consistent tables that might make everyone's life a little bit easier. Okay, so I was just hoping maybe Jennifer, you might to just say one word from the CMBP, and I've put both Jennifer and Carolyn's contact information up there. Too quick. Thanks, Jennifer. And yeah, I did speak to Jennifer, and she wanted me to work on that security policy template. And I just said, you know, I don't really want to bite off too much more than I can chew right away. So I did say that I would absolutely try to work on these tables first and foremost, and then I would hopefully be able to turn my attention to some of the other ones. But I think the CMUF is also a great. I think I might have a slide on them. I think the CMUF is also going to be a great. Venue to be able to collaborate and work with others, and we can get the security policy in the state that you'd like to see it. So I am a little early, and I guess so you guys will have some time for coffee or what have you, but if there's any questions, I'm happy to take them. If anyone, any comments, if anyone wants to contribute, here's my contact information. I think that's really all I have for you today. Yes, Steve?
Yeah, I think number one, I want to say I think it's a really good idea, and done some similar things before, and I guess a few things that might amplify it without maybe making it too complicated is one suggestion is to convince people also, I think, to list things like cipher suites, any security policies. We see that a lot of security policies don't have that information. I think that becomes very
services to the keys and CSPs. However you slice it or dice it, I think it's fine. It's just the requirement was there, and I kind of didn't want to not address it. So I had to make those things, you're right, it got extremely almost convoluted sometimes, and there's too much information in there.
Right.
So there's all kinds of ideas, and I'm happy to modify them based on feedback.
Yeah. We've got some things that are kind of refined over time that are basically that, but I like the idea of that, listing the service in the key instead of the other way around.
Sure, yeah, I mean, it can be met many, many different ways, and maybe once the security policy stands up, there'll be a better way that becomes evident from the different ways once we were, but I guess I'm only kind of solely got my blinders on with the CSPs and keys right now, and hopefully
right.
Standing that up. But when the bigger effort with the security policy happens, maybe we can get some of your feedback then, and maybe there creates a new table or what have you.
Sure, no, we'll contribute to that. And I think it's a step along the way towards even larger things with modules and kind of repetitive patterns.
Absolutely, yeah, great, thanks. All right, anyone else? Yes,
yeah, so
be gentle. Yeah, I think in principle it's a great idea. It would be nice to have just something you check some boxes in terms of what you support, and it spits out a table. And you're right, it could be done just based on the way that the Cypher suites are defined in something like TLS. Absolutely, that's a great point. Maybe with all the additional streamlining going on at CMVP, you guys? No? No? Don't look at me. That's not my wheelhouse. But yeah, that's a great idea actually.
The other comment I have about the security policy is sort of I think a long-standing, I'll call it usage issue. I always felt that the security policy, in its original form, was intended to be a end customer, federal user guide. Almost along the lines of something, maybe not the stick, in terms of that DoD sense, but just how do I take this product and as a sort of dummy proof, how do I use it? If so, what do I do with it? Over time, the security policy has turned into a microcosm, a summary, an abstract of the validation itself, which I think for most end customers is meaningless. Do they really care about the TLS, DRBP, internal keys that will never be seen and never be touched? No. So I guess my suggestion for a template would be to have this information, sort of summary information, at the end to start with what's going to be most meaningful to customers, which is secure configuration, secure visualization. I might even argue make them separate documents, but that's a semantics.
Well, I mean, that's above my pay grade in terms of making any of those decisions. I think someone like Jennifer might be a good point of discussion on that. I really, you're right. I think that the security policies have become just kind of a complete summary. But I also think that there has to be a mapping to Appendix C, right? Like or lump the standard. It says what it says, and there's some very strong shall statements in the standard that says you gotta list this, you gotta list this, you gotta list this. So we're always gonna be stuck with, I think, at minimum those. But you're right. I think. And please, CMVP folks, don't throw anything at me, but the value to the end user reading a security policy is probably not what it should be. In terms of being cohesive, actually having meaningful security instructions on how to operate the product, module, whatever it may be, and I think the emphasis is more describing the validation, other than those maybe instructions on how to configure and install. But I think, again, looking at the standard we have, it's kind of almost required us to list some of that stuff prescriptively. Sorry, Ashley, yes?
I'm sorry, you hit up on the points.
So again, when we're kind of saying, that's okay. I was just wondering who that was and if they were talking to me. So I guess just to put a cap on that, I think that we have to find the balance between what the value is to the end user reading it, but also this is a conformance validation program, and how do we measure that? Like, how do we measure that information, and how do we, again, maintain efficiencies, right? Like, from a CMVP perspective, if they comment on that, well, how do we as the lab and the vendor, you know, it's going to cycle, I think, a little bit, and that would be my only concern. But the point's well taken. Yes, sir.
As a lab, I frequently deal with the vendors who come to me and says, here's my cryptographic module, am I covered? And I says, have you read the security policies? Yes, but you don't understand.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, these are all excellent points, and I think, you know, I'd encourage you and those vendors, if we're able to get a community going at the CMUF, to try to find a way to make these more relevant and useful, but at the same time, keep that objective of meeting those requirements. Yes?
Yeah, I have from a vendor perspective, I have a kind of maybe a little bit off track, but an implementation question on the template.
Yeah.
Or just a discussion point. Many times we have several evaluations go on concurrently, and each of the documents are 98% similar.
Yeah.
And having the same information in multiple places makes consistency very difficult for
yes.
for everybody.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
But I also understand doing by reference makes it more difficult for the reviewer to keep flipping between documents. And just keep that in mind if there's a way that we can simplify the process so that we do have consistent things out there so that
yes.
you know, a customer buys one of each of our types of switches, routers, or whatever, and they pick it up and they're slightly different because of the editorial and the review process that you pick them all up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's part of a little bit, I think what you're referring is different comments from different reviewers make the security policy different. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, that adds to it. I'll just talk about your table. Even
okay.
Just, you know, your table and
yeah.
fill that in. You know, we can expand it out to the entire, universe. But
yeah,
even that, changing it a little bit, you know, here, now I have to replicate it. Did I get it? And what if
I understand.
Already approved and the next one isn't?
Right, right.
You know, how do we do it? How do we do it so that it's useful but not
just one second. Yeah. So just some experience, and I think that we've coordinated with the CMVP on this. So if you're a vendor that's submitting, say, seven modules at once or in very short succession, what I typically do is the lab would use the special instructions, or you'd contact a Carol and a Jennifer or a Postel and say, hey, here's the situation, here's the TIDs. Can we have one, for consistency, and so that when this all comes out of the oven, we're going to have consistent security policies, consistent comments, and it actually, I don't mean to speak for you guys, but it actually increases the efficiency over there as well, right? Because they want to maintain efficiencies, and it actually sometimes works better when one reviewer looks at a similar set of modules. So what you can do is ask your lab to say, can one reviewer, and this is again, it's not saying that they're going to do it, but if they feel that it does meet their objective, they'll have one reviewer review that entire set of modules. So then you'd be dealing with, say, one reviewer for those seven validations. And you should, in principle and in theory, those security policies should come out reasonably the same.
But again, that's an excellent point. You know, we do work with the labs to try to do that. But again, the replication of the same data in multiple places is always...
I think it's always going to be a challenge. I mean, again, I guess I would encourage you to give maybe once we're further along in this process, maybe at that point you can have a look at it and give us some feedback, because it's hard. I think we're trying to first meet the requirements and make it so that it's kind of universally adaptable, and then at that point I think we can integrate some of that more advanced feedback. But I'm happy to try to do the best I can with that. Mr. Brish.
Yeah, I guess there's always a trade-off when security policy, because you need to show how the module is fit for part, but at the same time, you don't want to make it like an administrator's guide, which could be explode to about 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
Some of this technology is very, very, it's not all about the crypto. Part of it is about the crypto,
So I don't think we're ever going to meet both objectives of something that's going to be conformant to the standard in the way that the CMVP would like it, and then have that comprehensive and cohesive information for the end user. I just don't think we can meet both objectives. Yes, Steve?
Maybe, you know, long term, consider something like the same with consolidated certificates to consolidate security policies. We have a family of products that, I mean, mm-hmm. same as Bob was saying.
Yeah,
we have
interesting.
A similar thing where we've got 10 or 15 certificates that are almost identical. If we could take the identical parts out, for the most part, those are the function in CSV tables, have that as a common element, and have things like the parts with the administrative instructions and how to apply
sure.
tables and things
That's a good
like
point.
That. Each document, they all referring to the one for the,
yeah.
for the crypto parts, something like that in the long
yeah.
run.
Yeah, Jennifer or Carolyn, I don't know if that would make sense. So if I can paraphrase, so like you would have a series of boxes that run the same firmware, likely have very similar components, so the entropy stuff would be nearly identical, and the algorithms and FIPS related stuff, for lack of a better term, would be nearly identical, so you could have almost like a common security policy, is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, for all that internal stuff, and then the external stuff, like how to apply the tells,
yeah.
and the stuff specific to that box, mm-hmm. and separate for each one. So then you've got the common part that covers all of them, and then different kind of header chunks for each one, something like that.
Okay.
Because
well,
right now we manage a dozen different security policies, and they do drift.
So I think, I heard this a lot during the managers meeting, they'll take that under advisement. Excellent. No, but that's a great, we've got a couple of great suggestions even today, so that's excellent. All right.
Any last quick questions? We just need to close out. If not, thank you very much, and we'll start again in just a few moments. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.